Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast.
Hey everybody, it's just going to be me for this podcast. I've wanted to do a solo podcast for a while, kind of to just tell a story rather than have a casual conversation with another person, and this felt like a good opportunity. I'm in Beijing, China now. Happy to say that I'm back in my apartment. I've been gone for about 2 months. This morning when I came back, I was happy to see blue skies, and now I'm looking out at the mountains in the background and remembering how beautiful the city is when it's a nice day. And that kind of reminds me, I'll talk about briefly the pollution in the news. I've been reading a lot about pollution in China lately. It seems like every time the pollution level gets high here, another article comes out that Beijing is this horrible polluted place. And I just want to clarify a few things. It's not usually that bad. Every now and then in the winter, yes, the pollution can be horrible. And when it's a bad day, it's a really bad day. Like, you don't even want to go outside, even wearing a mask. But then the wind comes, like there is today, and blows all that nasty pollution away, and you get some really nice days. So it's kind of hit and miss in the winter. And guess what? When March or April comes around, you're not going to read about pollution in Beijing. Why? Because there isn't any. Or usually, at least. There are some days that are moderate, but usually it's not going to be like a horrible day. And the thing is, that's how the news works. You're never going to see a story in the news like, and today was a beautiful blue sky day in Beijing, no pollution whatsoever. That's not really a story. The story happens when it gets bad. And it's one of those frustrating things as a traveler, because I see the world so differently than the CNN and the major news networks see it. There's never going to be a story likewise that says, and traveler goes away for 2 months and nothing bad happens, and he didn't get robbed or anything, and he just had a good time, and now he's back home. That's not really a story either. What's a good story? Traveler gets kidnapped. Traveler gets murdered. Traveler gets robbed. All those things are stories, and it's understandable. Those kind of stories sell. But I've got to say, the vast majority of the time, it's not like that. Most of the world is pretty safe. Most people are good people, and I'll get into a little bit of that today. Although I'm going to have some good stuff and bad stuff, so maybe some of this stuff might sell. Who knows? I hope you find this interesting. Let me know what you think. I'm going to talk about what I've been doing for the last 2 months. In middle of December, right before I was going to leave for this long trip, I came down with some sort of nasty chest infection. And it really shut me down for a couple of weeks, which is unfortunate because I was traveling that whole time. And I could barely walk, and I was just coughing constantly and taking all sorts of medicines that weren't really helping. Finally, I got myself some antibiotics, and that cleared it up. Along the way, I went with my wife, Katie, and our friend, Shalan, and we met up with our other friend, Croy, out in Xining, which is a remote city in Qinghai province. And we recorded a podcast together, Croy, Shalan, and I did, and that was number 22. Go ahead and check it out. You can even hear my voice sounds awful, but it's still intelligible at least, and that was from my infection. We traveled together for maybe 4 or 5 days in Xining and then Xi'an, and then we said goodbye to our friends, and Katie and I flew together to Yunnan province. And so we had about 2 weeks over Christmas and New Year's to travel around. Yunnan province is in the south of China. It's not quite tropical, but much warmer than Beijing. And it doesn't have a lot of pollution, so that's one really big benefit of Yunnan. It's also a beautiful place. And so Katie and I went through, did a trek at Tiger Leaping Gorge, which was awesome. It was a couple of days in this beautiful valley and overlooking some awesome mountains. You can see some pictures of it on my website, on my blog. And then we went up to Shangri-La, which was another great place. This was like 3,000 meters above sea level, so it was actually quite cold at night, but then during the day, it got a little bit warm. I met the owner of the hostel that we stayed at. His name was Jun, and we recorded a podcast together as well. That was number 23. Go ahead and check that one out if you're interested in knowing what it's like to move to China from a foreign land and open your own hostel. That was a cool, Jun had a cool story. After Shangri-La, Katie and I took buses down to a little village called Shashi. And I had heard about this village from a friend, and I've talked about it a lot in my several previous podcasts because I recorded maybe like 7 or 8 of them there. So I'm not going to talk about it much here other than to say I just loved it. And this was kind of the end of our first 2 weeks. I know I glossed over all of that, but I've written about it a little bit in my blog, so I don't want to repeat myself too much here. Normally, there's like a month or 6 weeks maybe between January 1st and Chinese New Year. And Chinese New Year is like the biggest holiday by far in China. So normally there's a longer break. This year, because the Chinese New Year is on a lunar calendar, much like Easter is on a lunar calendar, so it moves around year to year. This year, there was only 3 weeks between January 1st and the Chinese New Year. And for Chinese New Year, the prices, ticket prices for flights go way up. And trains sell out like immediately. It's by far the biggest migration of people in the world all year. There's nothing that can even compare to it because virtually everyone in China goes to their hometown to be with family for a few days. And that's a lot of people. And most people don't live in their hometown. When I say hometown, I don't even mean where they were born. I mean where their family is from, their ancestral homeland, which can be very far from where they live. So everyone wants to travel at once, and consequently, ticket prices go way up. And it turned out to be a lot cheaper for me to just kind of stay put for a few weeks than to go back to Beijing and then come all the way back down. And on top of that, I was in a place that I loved anyway, so I just decided to stay in Shashi while Katie went back to work. And we talked about what we were going to do when Katie returned. We were going to get back together and travel. She had like 2 more weeks off of work so we could travel together. And that's mainly what I'm going to talk about today. So we decided that we wanted to do a bicycle trip, bike touring. If you've never heard of this or don't know what it is, it's basically just you take all of your gear with you that you need. And you put them on a bicycle and you ride around. And it some people do this just for a couple of days. Some people live like this. They can travel for years. And one reason that they can travel so long on a bike is because it's very cheap. You don't have to buy bus tickets or train tickets. Your bicycle is your transportation. Another huge advantage is that you get to see a lot of scenery all day long while you're pedaling. You're looking at the world. If you don't ride a bicycle normally, I would encourage you to just go out and bike around your own city, and you'll be surprised at all the stuff that you see that you never even knew was there. Even if it's like a couple blocks from your house, you'll see little things that you never noticed from your car because when you're in your car, you're just moving too fast and you're focused on driving. And when you're biking, you're going slower, you can take it all in a lot better. And even more than biking is walking. So go out for a walk for a couple of miles and you'll see even more stuff. But of course, walking, the downside is that it's quite slow, whereas cycling, you can cover some pretty good ground in a day. But we wanted to do a trip for about 2 weeks on bicycles. So the first question was what kind of bikes to get? And we decided that while we could buy like nice touring bikes, we decided to go with fold-up bikes. And these bikes, if you haven't seen one before, they fold in half. There's a hinge in the frame, and This makes them very compact. And now, normally, these bikes have small wheels. They're only like 20 inches. And the handlebars fold down, the seat folds down, and then you can put it in a bag. And it can be quite small, so it's cool because you can fold up this bike and put it on a train, put it on an airplane if you want as your check-in luggage, and you can cover great distances without riding on your bike if you just happen to need to do that. So we decided to get these bikes, but we talked to some friends and asked around a little bit and realized that the normal fold-up bikes are a little too, like, they're not really ergonomically that good because of the small wheels. And I'm quite a tall guy. I'm like 6'3". So I think after a couple of days on one of these tiny fold-up bikes, I'd be not feeling very good about this trip. So we decided to get full-size bikes with 26-inch wheels instead of 20-inch. And they still fold, though. The only thing is they're not quite as compact. You can still put them in a bag and you can still put them on public transportation, but they're a little bit of a pain in the ass to carry, as I found out later, and I'll get into that. We ordered these bikes from Shenzhen, and they're made in Japan, and we got them shipped to this little village of Shashi, where I was staying, to this hostel. So that was another big thing. We decided, well, we could start our trip from really anywhere, but it'd be so much easier just to start from where I was, and we could go from there. And it happened to be that this city is kind of at the, or village, is at the top of a valley, and we could kind of bike along this valley and then head to the southwest and end up in this town called Reli. And this is on the border of Myanmar. So that was kind of our ultimate goal, and that would be pushing it. We kind of knew this. We'd only have about 9 days on the bikes to pedal, but if we made good progress each day, we could get to this town and then throw our bikes on a bus and then come back to Beijing. And the way to get back, well, Katie had to get back to work, so she bought a plane ticket. Again, these are really expensive this time of year. I'm more flexible on my time, so I got a train ticket home, and I'll get into that later. Okay, so we kind of had our timeline set up. We ordered the bikes. They came. Unfortunately, they didn't have racks or kickstands, and you really need a rack when you're carrying gear so that you can so you don't have to carry it on your back. So I took one day and went to Dali, and I talked about this in another podcast, number 29, and that was with Rami from Lithuania. That was a really interesting discussion. Long day. I'm not going to talk about it here because I've already mentioned it. Go ahead and listen to that podcast if you're interested. So now we had bikes with racks, with kickstands. We had a route picked out. We had bags to put them in, like these giant bags, so they don't look like bicycles. We've heard if you try to throw a bike on a train or on a bus, that sometimes the driver will get grumpy if they know it's a bicycle. They just don't like to see it. And so now these just look like big bags, although there's no real secret. Everybody kind of understands they're bicycles, but at least they're a little bit disguised. So the final thing was, we talked about, what could go wrong here? What are some of our contingencies? Well, one thing was, we'd be traveling during a holiday, and we weren't really sure about the hotel situation. We were planning to just stay in hotels. We didn't really want to camp on this trip. It would just be too much gear. But we thought, well, what happens if all the hotels are full in a town? Or if another possibility is that the owner of the hotel just went back to their hometown and the hotel is closed. So we thought it's possible we won't find a room. And the other thing is, what if it's getting dark and we're just not in a town and we just didn't plan well for one day? Okay, let's bring a tent just in case. So we can always set up a tent and camp. It's kind of like a last resort, but at least we have it to fall back on. Okay, what else could go wrong? Well, the next biggest thing would be a flat tire, because there's going to be a lot of gravel roads. There's going to be broken glass here and there. Flat tires happen, even on brand new bikes. So we brought a spare tube, and we brought a patch kit, and we got a pump. So if we got a flat tire, we could always fix it. As long as we didn't like blow out all four of our tires at once, we'd be good to go. And beyond that, we thought, well, these are brand new bicycles. We just ordered them. There's probably nothing else is going to break. And then we kind of did some research. And from what we saw, there's a couple websites that said, look, your first bicycle tour trip, you're going to carry too much gear. You're going to regret it. You're going to carry all these extra parts that you won't need. And if something goes wrong, just get to the next village. There's going to be a bicycle repair guy if there's not a full-blown bike shop, and someone can fix your bike. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. Unless if you're like completely going in the middle of nowhere, which we weren't. We were going to be in China, where there's like a lot of people, not in cities, but we'd be going through little villages and stuff. So we kind of took this advice and just decided not to get any extra gear to weigh ourselves down. All right, so we had a complete plan set. Katie flew down to Yunnan province, and she came out to Shaanxi on her first day of her vacation. And the next day we just tested the bikes a little bit, and there was one problem. The bike that she picked, the two bikes were identical, but the one that she took, it was fine. Like, everything worked fine. Mine, I was having trouble with two of the gears. The chain just kept skipping, and I didn't seem to be able to use these gears. And we figured, well, we'll just try it out. I think we'll be fine. I'll just avoid using those two gears. These bikes have 27 speeds, so 9 gears in the back and 2 in the front, or 3 in the front, and 2 of the ones in the back were not usable. I thought, okay, I'll just work my way around those gears, won't use them. And once we get to a bigger city where there's like a proper bike shop, we could just make some adjustments whenever we need. No big deal. We didn't want to like delay our trip at all because of this. And there's a limited amount of time that we have. But that was really the only issue. And so that night was Chinese New Year's Eve. And there was a big party at the hostel. It had been almost empty the whole time I was there, but now it was full. We had a giant dinner, a huge feast, and lit off a lot of fireworks. And it was a really fun time, and it felt like a good time to leave, a good send-off for us. And I said goodbye to all the people I'd met at the hostel. And I was especially grateful to Feifei for helping me out with these bikes. So shout out to Feifei. Thanks for helping me. You really made this trip possible. Okay, so day one was the next day. It was also New Year's Day in China. We made some good progress right away. I had that skipping chain problem, but we went through several little villages, and all these people were sitting outside, like, enjoying their holiday. There were old people just kind of watching us and playing cards, and kids were playing on their little bikes and running around, and so we felt like almost like celebrities right away, because these are not villages that a lot of foreigners go through. There's most of the tourists who come to Shaanxi take a different road out, and so this was the more remote road, and there wasn't a lot of traffic. It was just awesome. It was beautiful weather that day. Everything was going really well. Well, maybe an hour or so into our trip, we just stopped for a quick water break, and then Katie said, Did we bring the bike bags, those giant bags that we're going to store our bikes in when we want to go on a train? And I was like, I don't think we brought them. And sure enough, they were not with us. We remembered everything else, but not the bike bags. So we already had a problem. So now what do we do? Do we go like send one of us back to get the bags? Do we just say screw it and buy some new bags later? We just decided to go pick them up. So I just took all the gear off my bike, or off Katie's bike, actually, because all the gears were working, and just went with an unloaded bike, and I basically flew back to Shaanxi. It's so much faster to bike without any gear on it. And I picked up the bags, came back. Well, we lost like an hour and a half of time, but at least we had everything, and we were still fine, and we continued on our trip. Up and down these hills and into this valley, we were kind of following this river, and there were lots of little villages along both sides. And the vegetation was very green, things were blooming because it was beginning to get to springtime in this part of China. And we were kind of, the trip overall would be downhill, which is awesome because we wouldn't have to climb so many hills. Although there were some, and the vegetation became more and more tropical as we went along. And the palm trees were getting bigger already. We could see it. There was more bamboo, more ferns. And we were overall having a really good day, despite my frustrations with going up these hills where I couldn't use two of my gears. I was still making do. I was still making it work. And we ended up that day in a little village called Qiaoho. And there were people in this village kind of celebrating still. Most of the shops were closed, but we found a hotel right away. It was a nice room, cheap price, no problem. We went out to dinner at the only restaurant that was open, and it was run by Muslims, which was interesting because there's not a lot of Muslims in this part of China. But here, I don't know if they just didn't take holidays or what, but this was the one restaurant that was open. And outside, there was this several giant pieces of meat hanging on a line, and this guy was sitting there with a knife just butchering them apart, and blood was dripping from this big carcass onto the ground. And anyway, we had still had a really nice dinner at this restaurant. Everyone was super nice to us, and we got to bed early. We're going to have a long day ahead of us the next day because we didn't make it quite as far as we wanted the first day. But day two, we got an early start. Again, we were going up and down these hills, still enjoying our day, but this chain was still bugging me, and it was still skipping on the gears. And pretty early in the day, as I was starting to go up a hill, all of a sudden I heard this snap. And I thought, or maybe I just hoped, that my chain had simply come off. And so I took my bike and pushed it the rest of the way up the hill to some flatter ground where I could look at it better. And once I got there, I saw that indeed it was not just off of the gears. It had totally broken. And I looked at it and thought, crap, now what? Broken chain. And it's a brand new bike. And I don't know if it had to do with the gears that were skipping. I wasn't using one of those gears at the time. But yeah, I mean, who knows? The chain just broke. And this is not something we had planned for. We didn't think a chain on a brand new bicycle would break, but it did. So, and now we were between two villages. So now what do we do? Well, Katie and I talked it over. We could just push the bikes the rest of the way. But then we thought, well, maybe we could hitch a ride. And I thought, it's going to be really hard to hitch a ride with a fully loaded bicycle to throw on the back. But then right when we were talking about this, this guy came toward us with a tuk-tuk with a flat bed, and the bed was empty. And we're like, oh, wow. So we flagged him down, and I kind of told him my problem. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, I can take you to the next town. So I just folded my bike in half, which really helped because the bed of this tuk-tuk wasn't very big. I jumped in, and the guy drove me away. And then Katie and I made plans to meet later. She continued biking. So this guy took me to the next town, which was called Liantie. And this town looked like a ghost town. Like, everything was just closed, which wasn't a huge surprise. It was New Year, after all. And the driver pointed out this garage door that was closed. And he said, this is where the bike shop is. You can try to find these guys. But they're closed today. I think tomorrow they'll be open. And he dropped me off in the town. I tried to give him some money, and he wouldn't have it. He's like, no money. He did offer me a cigarette, which is so common in China. If you are a smoker and you don't have plans to quit, come to China. It's awesome. It's a smoker's paradise. The cigarettes are dirt cheap here, and you can smoke just about anywhere you want. But if you're not a smoker, it takes some getting used to, and people offer you cigarettes all the time. It's just a very normal thing here. And so I turned this guy down, and like I said, he didn't want any money. The people are really nice, I found, in these little villages. They're super generous, which is one great reason to travel to little villages, really anywhere in the world. They're awesome places. So I caught up with Katie. It was only like 1 p.m. at this point. We still had a long day ahead of us, but we couldn't find any other bike stores that were open. And a few people told me, yes, tomorrow there'll definitely be, this one shop will definitely be open. You can get your bike fixed. So we just decided to just call the day. You know, this was a problem, but again, it's just a chain. It's not a big deal. Chains are everywhere. They're standard equipment and they're very cheap and easy to obtain is what we thought. So let's just call it off. We lost a day and tomorrow we'll get it fixed and we'll just continue on. So we got a room in a hotel. Again, the owner was super nice. It was a really good room, very cheap, only 50 kwai, which is like $8 for a hotel room. And we just kind of blew off the day. Okay, so the next morning, I took the bike and went down to this shop that the tuk-tuk driver had pointed out, and it was open, but it was not a bicycle shop. It was a motorcycle shop, and there were no bicycles anywhere to be seen. The owner, it immediately became clear that the guy working there had no idea how to fix a bike. He didn't know how to thread the chain through, but again, he was very nice, and while he couldn't sell me a new chain, he tried to fix my old one. And of course I had thought of trying to fix the broken chain, but my worry was if I kind of half-assed fixed it, which is all I could really do. I'm not a bicycle mechanic and unfortunately I don't really know much about maintenance. It's something that I'd like to learn. But if I half-assed fixed it, then what would happen if it broke again while we were truly in the middle of nowhere? So I thought, well, let's just get this thing, you know, either a brand new chain or really get it fixed by someone who knows what he's doing. Well, this guy gave it his best shot, but he couldn't force this pin that had busted through the hole that it was supposed to go into, even with all the tools that he had in his motorcycle shop. He spent like 20 minutes on it and finally gave up. And I asked him how much money he wanted just for his time. And he said, oh, no, no money, no money. Like, oh man, these people are just too nice here. But I have really good, even though this experience was bad, I have very positive feelings toward the people that we met in these villages. All right, and so then I walked around the town, asked a ton of different people, like, where's the bike shop? The first village we were in was only like, oh, I don't know, 1,000 people or something. This village was a little bigger, it had probably a couple thousand people. And everyone just said, no bicycles here, no bike shops, which is crazy to me because China is like supposed to be an awesome country for bicycling. I mean, there's so many bicycles in Beijing, but not here. Maybe just because it's hilly and people don't want to cycle up and down hills. The improving economy, I'm sure, has something to do with it, that people can afford motorcycles now or cars, so they don't really ride bicycles anymore. But whatever it was, there simply was not a bike shop in this town. So already this advice that we had read about there being a bike shop in every town, we already could tell that was false. And we were kind of like kicking ourselves for believing it, and we're just kind of stuck again. So we had to decide what to do. I could go to the next town, which was substantially bigger, with the broken bike, and put it on a bus, go to that town, get it fixed, come back. But then we thought, well, you just never know. What if I can't get back the same day? What if there's no bike shops again? So Katie and I decided, let's just pack up everything and hire a van or something to come take us to the next town. So we went back to our hotel and we asked the owner, hey, do you have a friend who can take us down to the next town who has a van? I think it was literally about 3 minutes before a van pulled in that was empty. I mean, it's amazing how quick these things can happen in China. So we got everything packed, we threw it all in the van, and then the hotel owner said, hey, do you mind if I jump in here? I just wanna go like halfway. We're like, oh, yeah, fine. There still was room. So we went with the hotel owner. She got off a few towns later. The price that we had agreed on was 200 kwai, which is about $30. And it's about a 40-mile trip. And so this seems totally fair, no problem. But when the hotel owner got out, she handed the driver 50 kwai. And she said, okay, now you only have to pay him 150. And we're like, no, we'll pay the whole 200. You don't have to pay. I mean, she had set it all up after all. And she's like, no, I'm paying. And she just insisted and paid and went away. And so now yet another person was really, really generous with us. And the price she had paid the driver was the same price we had paid her for the room. So essentially, she just kind of got this ride in exchange for us staying in her hotel for a night. So we continued on and got to the next town, which is called Yangbi. And this town was substantially bigger. It was like the county seat. It had like government buildings. It had a couple of stoplights, which was truly amazing. I hadn't seen a stoplight in a long time. And if I had to guess, I'd say maybe between 10 and 20,000 people lived there. So there must be a bike shop there, right? Well, the owner of the van dropped us off in front of a bike shop, but it was closed because of Chinese New Year again. And so we found a hotel, got settled in. Then I went and took the good bike and rode all around looking for shops that were open, but they were pretty much all closed, except I found this kid's toy store and this lady who owned the place. She was sitting outside in a chair and she was rather overweight, and there were a few kids' bicycles outside, and I asked her if she could sell me a chain or work on this bike, and she just laughed at me and said, no, why would an adult ride a bike? And this, she kind of had this attitude about her. And so that was the only place I found any bicycles at all in this town, which sucked, because now what were we going to do? So now we're on day four, and we still had about three more days until things kind of got back to normal after the new year, like people started opening their shops again. So we had to decide, what do? We stay in this town and hope that the actual bike shop opens, but maybe it won't? Or do we just kind of just call the loss and say this bicycle trip just isn't working? And so that's what we did. And we ended up just leaving our bicycles chained up to a light pole out on the street in this town. And then we left all of the gear for cycling that we didn't need with the hotel. And she said she'd look after it. And we promised we'd come back in like 3 or 4 days and pick it all up again once the shops actually opened. I had this terrible feeling because bicycling was supposed to be really freeing. Like, you see all the scenery, you take it all in. And the first 1.5 days before my chain broke, that's really how it felt. It was awesome. And as soon as we jumped in that taxi, I was like, we're skipping all this stuff. It just felt really bad and wrong. And by the time we got to this bigger town, these bikes were no longer even fun. It was like they were just weighing us down more. They were just this extra gear that we had to carry and push, and I don't know, I just really wasn't enjoying it. And it was all because of a chain, which is like a $5 part. And I was really kicking myself for not thinking to buy a spare chain before we left. But Katie really helped me to stay positive. She's a very positive person, and she said, let's just make the most of this. So we just left the bikes behind, took all of the rest of our gear, grabbed a bus to Dali, which is a bigger town. Then we grabbed another bus and went to Baoshan, which is a city of a couple million. We managed to get tickets for the last bus of the day, so we took that right away. And by the end of this day, we were in Reili, which is the town that we wanted to end up in anyway. So we had made it all that way, albeit only 30 kilometers of it was actually on a bicycle. And the other 500 or 600 kilometers was by motor vehicle. Not exactly what we wanted, but at least we got there. And so, like I said earlier, this town was on the border with Myanmar. And so the next day, we went to this border, and this was just, it was really sad. Normally, I like to go to border towns because they're like kind of this mixture of cultures, and it's interesting to see two different countries coming together. And indeed, that was happening, but in a way that just depressed me. It was like all these people from Myanmar were outside just begging for money. And they looked really underfed and just not in good shape at all. And so we kind of checked this border out for a little bit. And just it was so sad we just had to leave. If you're from Myanmar and listening to this, I really feel for you, and I hope your situation improves soon. I guess the biggest takeaway I had was I saw these kids on the other side of the fence that made up the border, and they were just sticking their hands through, hoping someone would hand them some food. And I mean, I had this thought, like, they were just born on the wrong side of the fence. They're just people, you know? And in China, like, the economy is doing so well. Everything's going really great. And if they had just been born, like, 20 feet to the west, I know it's, like, they weren't literally born right at the fence, but if they were just born a little bit closer or a little bit different place, they'd be in China and they'd have totally different lives. But that's just how the world works, and sometimes it can be a cruel place. We wanted to cheer ourselves up a little bit after this experience, and a couple of people from the hostel were going to this village. I should back up and say China has, I think it's 56 different recognized ethnic groups, and the main group is called Han, and they're the people you probably think of when you think of Chinese people. They're over 90% of the population. But the other 55 groups are ethnic minorities, and we had seen a few of these already during this trip. One of these minorities that lived around this area was called the Jingpo people, and there was this village where they were going to have this festival of some sort. We didn't quite know what it was, but Katie and I decided, yeah, well, we've got all afternoon, let's just go there. And this place turned out to be really, really amazing. There was this long line to get in, and there were about 20 cops standing along the line, just making sure no one tried to skip ahead. And people were constantly trying to skip ahead. They'd come up and try to talk to me and Katie. Usually they smelled of alcohol, and they'd go, "Hey, hello, my friend, and how you doing?" And hug us, and then just stand there. And the cops would come and push them out of the way and go, "No, back to the end of the line." So we kind of worked our way up this line. I had my camera out because so many people were dressed in traditional costumes, really bright colors, and there was a lot of music playing, and people were dancing and smiling. And at one point I was taking some pictures, and the line moved forward quite a ways, and I noticed this and ran forward like 20 feet to the next part of the line. And a cop saw me like jump up there, and he thought I was skipping in line, and he came up and just shoved me. And I kind of like braced myself and had to like push back. And finally someone nearby just convinced him, no, he didn't skip. He's supposed to be here. And the cop left me alone. So that was a little intense. But as we moved up, we saw that this giant festival was happening. All these people were dancing and playing music, and it was just really a cool place. And Katie and I were the only foreigners there. I should say at this point that we hadn't seen a foreigner yet since leaving Shashi, and it had been like 5 days now or 6 days, which is pretty unusual to see only people from China and Myanmar during this time. And people just kept coming up to us and wanting our picture and talking. Again, this is pretty normal in a small town in China, but it's just on another level altogether. I mean, I've never felt like such a celebrity as I did that day. Even knowing that I've lived in China for a couple of years and get my picture taken all the time, this is just an entirely different level. Well, one guy that came up to us was 77 years old, and he was happy as could be. He told us in all of his years, he had never seen a foreigner ever, which was astounding. So we were in quite an unknown and remote place, and we really appreciated that we were here having this great time. And this guy just kept dancing with us, and he didn't have a phone because he was 77 years old and never used the internet or anything like that. And he just kind of took us under his wing. And we did this like long conga line for like an hour and worked our way around this whole festival. And when we were supposed to leave, this guy just kind of said, this old guy said, "Hey, come on this way." And he snuck us up to like the front of the stage where all the people were playing the music. And we just kind of hung out with them for the rest of the time. Let me tell you, this was amazing. Katie said it was one of her top two or three experiences in all of China, this one festival. I took a lot of pictures and videos, and I haven't gone through them yet, but I'm going to put together a video and I'll add it to this podcast. So I definitely recommend that you check it out. After a few days of being kind of down on our luck, we had a really great day and we're super happy to be there. All right, so, oh, and I should say later on, just a quick funny side story. Later on, there was like this like traditional style dancing. And so this is where there's a theater, a stage, and everybody sits down. And on the way in, the police set up these metal detectors. And the line kept growing. And first, they couldn't figure out how to plug these things in because they were outside. Like, where's the electricity? Where's the outlet? People kind of started getting more and more restless. Well, finally, they got them plugged in after like 15 minutes, turned on. And I looked down the line, and at least half of the people were dressed in traditional Jingpo costumes, which you'll see if you look at my blog. But just one feature besides the colorful outfits is that every man, at least, carried a sword with him. And these are not like plastic or something. These are real metal swords. And they all went through the metal detector. And so as the line was going, the metal detectors were just like... the metal detectors had never shut up. And every single person set them off. And the cops just kind of watched the whole line go through of all these people carrying swords in. And they're like, yeah, whatever. Like, these guys, they always have swords. I asked somebody about it. They said, nah, they're allowed to have swords because it's part of their tradition. No problem, which I guess completely defeats the purpose of having metal detectors. But anyway, I digress. The performance was pretty cool, but we were so exhausted from the earlier dancing that it was hard to even enjoy. We were like falling asleep at that point. All right, so the next day we went back to Dali, and this took most of the day. Then we took another bus, a miniature bus, up to this other town that we had left the bikes in. And now came kind of the moment of truth, because we got to this town and immediately we could see it looked like a different place. Like, everything was open, all the shops were there were people everywhere, things were back in full swing. This is clearly the case. We went up to get our bikes and we found that they were on the ground. They were still there, but down, like knocked over and covered in dirt, and it didn't seem like vandalism or anything. It was like either a storm came through and blew them down, or maybe the street sweeper, because the locks were still fine. Nobody had tampered with the locks. Then we went into the hotel, and the owner said, "Hey, she confirmed it was a street sweeper that had come through and blown water at the bikes and knocked them over." And she said, yeah, you didn't leave them in a safe spot. It's dangerous there. And the cops came by and asked whose bikes those were and said they need to be moved. Well, luckily, the cops didn't move them for us because they were still there. And they looked undamaged, so that was okay. All of our stuff was still there. Nothing got stolen. So now we had to find the bike shop. I pushed my bike, which again didn't have a chain, down to this bike shop. And it was there, and it was open. But it wasn't a bike shop. It was a motorcycle shop once again. And this was just devastating, because all this time we thought this was a bike shop and the guys had no idea how to fix a bicycle. They kind of pointed us around to try to help us find another shop, but you kind of just never really know in China when someone gives you directions if they know where it is, because they're probably just going to tell you anything if they don't know, because they don't want to give you the bad news, or they want to save face, or whatever the reason, they'll give you a lot of bad directions. So we looked around the whole town again for a bike shop, couldn't find one, and Katie just wanted to leave right away, just get a taxi again and just say screw it and go to Dali, which is bigger still. I was a little bit stubborn though, I'll admit. I was hoping that we could still find a bike shop somewhere in the town. There, like, it's 20,000 people there. There must be a bike shop. Well, while we were walking, we found a pool hall. And it, as most pool halls are, this place was full of cigarette smoke. But the people inside were not grown adults. They were like 15-year-old boys. And they were all smoking cigarettes and playing pool. And we said hi to them and asked if they knew of any bike shops. And they kind of sent like a representative to come with us. And the thing is, I had forgotten about children or about teenagers, because these guys, they definitely were not old enough to drive cars. Even though they were smoking cigarettes, they couldn't drive a car. So maybe they actually got around by bicycle. This was quite possible. And they're probably the people we should be asking. So they sent someone to come with us. And this kid just walked with us all through these like little alleys winding around the town, and we walked past so many shops selling all kinds of random stuff like kitchen supplies and furniture and everything you can think of except for bicycles and bicycle supplies. He even went around to like some hardware stores and asked about a bike chain and asked about a bike shop, and he's a local, right? And still everyone said no, and they kept pointing to like this one particular area, this one block. And so finally we went down that block, but that was just the fat lady in her chair who was selling kids bikes. And those were literally the only bikes available in this town. And this kid just, he was, again, really, really nice to us. And he walked with us for like 20 minutes, and he didn't have to do that. But he said, God, I'm really sorry. There's just no bike shops here. So it wasn't even a Chinese New Year thing. Like, this town of 20,000 people still did not have even one bike shop. Amazing, but here I am telling the story. It's absolutely true. So now we're again down in the dumps, and we decided, okay, look, tomorrow we'll just throw our bikes on a bus and go to Dali. So that's what we did the next day. Now we were on day 9 of our trip, and still we had only biked 30 kilometers of a bike trip. Day 9, we folded up our bikes, put them in their bags, somehow managed to squeeze them onto this little mini bus, and we got some looks about it, because Katie kind of had to hold one bike in an aisle, and then I squeezed the other bike in the tiny luggage compartment, and we were pretty much taking up all of the space on the bus, but no one actually said anything to us, so that's good. We got to Dali, we found a tuk-tuk driver to take us to like part of the town where I seemed to remember finding this bike shop where I got the racks and the kickstands from. And so I kind of knew that there was this little place in this market, and if I could just find that guy again, I didn't like write it down or anything where it was, but if I could find him, maybe, just maybe, we could get a new chain and get on our way for the last couple days of our trip. Well, the tuk-tuk driver took us to this part of town, dropped us off, and sure enough, I was able to find this bike shop, and it was open, and the guy had a chain. This is awesome. Great news, right? We took our bike there, my broken bike there. He put on the new chain, and he said the chain is 15 kwai, and the installation fee is 5, so the total fee is 20. 20 kwai is like $3. That's how much it cost to put on a new chain. And that $3 cost us a week of our lives not having that chain. Wow. Well, he put on the chain, but damn if the gears were still skipping. And it's weird. Like, I tested it at the shop without any gear on the bike, and it looked fine. But as soon as I got on it and started really pedaling, the the gears were skipping. So I had to go real slow. And I was just, I'll admit, I was livid at this point. I was just so upset about this. How could this bike suck so bad when it's brand new? Well, we had to go a long ways to get to where we wanted, which was the old town, about 15 kilometers. Or normally that would be just, I don't know, 45-minute ride. Well, this turned into like an hour and a half because I had to go so slow. But we made it, and we went to a hostel. And the big thing in this area is this giant lake called Arhai Lake. And we decided that the next day we would rent a bike for me and then bike at least part of this lake. At least we could enjoy one day. We got one spare bike, and actually Katie took the spare, I took hers, but whatever. We biked along the lake on this winding road that went through many villages, and this was an awesome day. So many beautiful places. The countryside was amazing. There were all these green fields full of growing rice and tea and cabbage, various vegetables. A lot of people out working in the fields, and there were a lot of Chinese tourists too, like biking around and on mopeds. And the lake itself was big and beautiful. It was blue skies. It was warm weather. It was just perfect. And it kind of dawned on us at this point that this is how our entire trip should have been, except for less people. So that, again, I hate to be so negative. I was trying to stay positive, but boy, this thing was really a bust, this whole trip. But at least we had a really nice day riding around this lake. And we came back to the hostel, folded up the bikes one last time and put them in their bags, got packed. And then the next day, which was now 2 days ago, we put the bikes onto a city bus, went to the train station, and we took a train for about 7 hours to Kunming, which is the big city again in Yunnan province. From Kunming, Katie and I split up, and she was going to fly home, and I was going to take the train home. Now, the main reason I was going to take the train home is because it's so much cheaper than flying, but also just because I like trains and I like to watch the country go by. And Katie had to get back to work, so she really didn't have an option there. Now, I took her bike and she took mine just so that I could ride home from the train station once I got back to Beijing. And the train was 33 hours long, which might sound awful if you're used to riding on buses or airplanes. Like, even just a couple hours seems like an eternity. But on a train, really, it goes by fast. I had a bed, so I just got on one night at night, slept all night, and the train just kind of rocked me to sleep like a little baby. It was so nice. The clickety-clack, I love it. And then the whole next day, I was on the train. I read a book. I watched all the scenery. I met some interesting people. Yesterday just flew by, and the whole day on the train. Went to bed again, and by the time I got up, we were in Beijing. So that's 33 hours right there. And then I took the bike off the train, and as soon as I got outside the confines of the train station, I set it all up, and I biked home. And it was using Katie's bike, so it actually worked. And so this was one good kind of consolation prize. I was able to bike across Beijing, and I missed Beijing. I haven't seen it in a while, and I got to see Tiananmen Square as I biked, and I got to see some of the touristy sites. And now I'm really happy to be back and continue on with the last few months in Beijing before we move out of here. So I just kind of, I thought I'd wrap this up with a few lessons. One is something I talked about with Rami a lot and in our podcast. And again, I'd recommend listening to that one, number 29. We had a really nice discussion about travel in general. When you travel, the highs tend to be really high and the lows tend to be really low, like more ups and downs than you experience in normal life. And obviously, in normal life, you can have really awesome days and really bad days, but they're pretty rare. on either end of the spectrum. Most days are just, good. At least for me, for my life. Probably most people are like that too. But when I'm traveling, man, I have some really awesome days, like that day in the at the festival, and then some really bad ones, like the day my chain broke and I realized we were screwed over a $3 part. I think the lesson here, if there is one to be learned about the highs and lows, is that when you go back to your normal life after traveling for a long time, everything seems so trivial. It's just like, go to work, make some money, you live your life. Because you've experienced so many amazing days and so many bad days, I think it helps balance you as a person. It helps you cope better with when things go wrong, and it helps you kind of stay in the moment when things are going really well. So I think even though bad things do happen when you travel, I think it's all part of the experience of life, and it's something that it's almost like you have to go through the bad days, because if all you had were good days, they would just seem normal. So life wouldn't be that exciting, even though it wouldn't feel exciting, even though it really is. And so I think that's the biggest lesson here, to embrace both the bad and the good. But then logistically, obviously, there's another big lesson that Katie and I have learned, and that is that you need to bring spare parts if you're going to do a bike tour. Don't listen to those people who say, like, well, yeah, there's just bike shops everywhere, because there's not. At least not in China, at least not in that part of China, and in the modern age where most people have cars and motorcycles, it can be hard to find a bike shop. And it wasn't even really because of Chinese New Year. Like these towns that we were in literally did not have even one person who could fix a bicycle. And that can be infuriating, because normally that bike is your freedom. And it just becomes this giant, literally a giant weight on your shoulders as you're carrying it. I didn't really enjoy walking with probably about 100 pounds of gear between my backpack and my bicycle. I didn't like carrying that on my shoulders. I did it just because I had to, but it wasn't much fun. And so you can avoid that by buying a chain for $3 and whatever other parts you think you'll need. And the other lesson is learn how to fix a bike. And so that's something that I'm going to get into as soon as I can. And hopefully the next bike trip will go better. Katie and I are going to have to talk about it. Like, are we going to keep these bikes for a while, do another cycle trip, or sell them, or what's the plan? I'm not real sure at this point. Of course, I'm going to let you guys know. And I want to know something from you. Did you enjoy this podcast? Did you like the story? Any thoughts on that? I'd love to get your feedback. Just leave a message in the comments section. And thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.